fashion, you know, is the second dirtiest industry next to big oil. I mean, there's a couple tons of waste sent to landfill, textile waste sent to landfill every second.
Hello and welcome to the How to Be Good podcast, the show where we interview businesses and specialists to explore what can be done to reduce our impact on the planet and live more sustainably. You're here with Gareth and Anka. Today we have a great guest for you. Her lifestyle and work revolve around the circular economy and sustainability. She's been working for 15 years in waste management and has brought in this huge knowledge together with her twin sister to set up a no-waste, upcycle, sustainable company. She is also an active speaker and thought leader on topics of circular design and waste diversion. Her company transforms 100% organic cotton off-cut fabrics and end-of-roll threads and trims into contemporary kids' wear that can simply be composted at the end of life. So let's get to it. Let's talk with Lindsay LaRusso from Nudnik. Hello and welcome to the How to Be Good podcast. I'm here today with Lindsay LaRusso, the co-founder and CEO of Nudnik. How are you going?
I'm doing great. It's really nice to be here and chat with you today.
Not a problem. We're really looking forward to it. Could you tell us a little bit about Nudnik? And firstly, I want to make sure that I'm saying it correctly.
You are. Awesome. Yeah, absolutely. Good job. Not everyone gets it on the first go.
Well, we've had a couple of test goes, so it's okay. So how did Nudnik come to, how did it come to be?
Yeah, when we think about Nudnik, we think more about like how we can be empowered to do something good. So Nudnik is really our take on how we can do something positive to help contribute positively to climate, the effects of climate change. So Nudnik, we classify as a circular fashion business. So what we're doing is we're creating future-proof kids' wear from pre-consumer textile waste. And most specifically, we use organic off-cut fabrics. So off-cut fabrics or cutting waste is when large-scale apparel manufacturers lay down sheets and sheets and sheets of fabric. So you've got a really big stack of fabric, and then they digitally cut out all those pattern pieces. So there's always gaps left in that fabric, and that typically gets landfilled or burned. So when we started even thinking of the concept of using textile waste to create kids' clothes, we really audited a bunch of different forms of textile waste, like pre-consumer, post-consumer, end of roll, things like that. And then we identified cutting waste as a great opportunity because it's in abundance. We create, the fashion industry in general creates enough cutting fabric every year to give every person on earth 6 new t-shirts. So it's a staggering amount of fabric, and it's really underutilized because it's these small kind of awkward scraps. So if anyone gets a chance to look at our product, you'll see that we engineer our patterns to really utilize these small pieces. So it is a patchwork effect, but ultimately we're making best use of that scrap.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, that's fantastic. I didn't know that that was one of the stats. 6 t-shirts for every human.
Every year.
Wow.
Yeah, just from cutting waste.
I don't even think I buy 6 t-shirts a year.
I know, right? Well, you could have them just from the waste.
Wow, that's incredible. So before we get into more detail about the company, which we're itching to do, we'd love to also know more about you and how you and your twin sister, I believe, got there.
So it's funny. I think that the whole idea of waste and my sister and I have been intertwined since the very beginning. Like, our father started a waste management company here in Canada about 45 years ago and still runs it today. So Okay. We really grew up in that industry. Like, we grew up going on the to visit him in the office on the weekends, sitting in the trucks. And I worked for him for 15 years. My sister worked for him for about 6 years as well. So we did get a very good foundation within the waste management industry. And I'm just so passionate about circular economy and waste diversion. I truly believe that waste is the greatest resource today. So I really look at it through that lens. Like, how can we capture it in a specific volume, clean it, and then use it for something new? Our background, yeah, is waste management. Aside from that, being a twin, my sister and I always wanted to do something together. So we always, we were always scheming. We were always talking about different ideas. That's just the type of people we are. And when we came up with this one, it was just so in sync with our background that it really made a lot of sense. And I'd have to say, like, it started out really like a think tank. Like, we just thought, let's use textile waste that we know is going in landfill to create new clothing for kids, because I'd had my first child. It seemed to make sense using smaller scraps for smaller garments. And then it just started like, let's make some patterns, let's find some textile waste, and like, let's give it a shot. And ultimately, a business plan was created from that first piloting process, which changed over time. And then here we are a couple of years in.
So you said this one. Was there other ideas that were sparked earlier on that were either put aside, discarded, or decided not to be the ones that really you connected with?
There was a big one that we never really, and it was just because, you know, in terms of our entrepreneurialism, we just hadn't, this was earlier on. So I don't think we'd had the right tools to really kind of go after it at that point. My husband's an environmental filmmaker, and he did a documentary a couple years ago called Chemiracle, and it was really exposing the toxins in our household cleaners and everyday cleaning products.
All right.
So we were inspired by that too, and we wanted to start a product line where you would go into, and it was almost like a fresh, like, you know, if you go into a Subway or something like that, you've got all of your ingredients and you make your sandwich. We thought of the concept of having like base emulsions, like for moisturizer, face masks, things like that. And then you would have your add-ins depending on your skin type and things like that. So it was almost like a mix and match, all natural, or, you know, all natural products and things like that. But yeah, I mean, we're still passionate about that, but it just, you know, we put a preliminary business plan together and then kind of just let the ball drop, I think, a little bit. It wasn't the right business to go after at that time for us exclusively.
Understand. Yeah. Well, obviously you seem to have picked up the right one now.
Yeah, exactly. So this one, you know, when you hit a barrier as an entrepreneur, sometimes you either pivot or you stop. And I think with Nudnik, it's just always been any barrier we've come up against, whether it's passion, whether it's just the ability to get around them, we've always found a way to kind of keep that path moving forward. And I think that's, you know, a true testament to whether a business is successful or not, for sure.
Absolutely. I mean, if you've got that passion to make it successful no matter what and push on through no matter the hardships that come along the way, and obviously in a business there always are many, if you haven't got the passion, it's very hard to put in that extra effort.
100%.
So Nudnik, how did you come up with the name, and does the name have any specific meaning?
Yes. So the name is used widely in the Yiddish community. My husband's Jewish. But it, foundationally, it's not a Yiddish word. I think it comes from the UK when we did some research around it. What it means is, and my husband is a Nudnik, and I grew up, my parents didn't have the terminology for me, but I definitely was a Nudnik growing up. It's basically like little rascal, little pest. And it's used kind of with a negative undertone, which we think was kind of funny, but we want to spin it as a positive. So for example, what makes a kid annoying? They ask a million questions. Sometimes they break the rules. You know, maybe they want to be different or do things differently. And we actually think that those are really positive attributes that we want to instill in this next generation of kids and people. So we use it affectionately. Like, you know, you want to break the rules? Well, rebuild them better. Or ask a million questions. I mean, that's how you learn, right? Like, challenge the status quo. It's a foundation of what we try to do within Nudnik, but it's also, you know, the values that we want to inspire parents to instill in their own kids.
Well, I can safely say that I was definitely a Nudnik then. And from what I hear from Anka's mother, she was a Nudnik. And now we've got three kids that are all Nudniks.
Exactly. Well, congratulations. I think it's interesting and exciting to, you know, be amongst Nudniks. I definitely agree. My kids for sure are Nudniks as well, and get it from both of us too.
Fantastic.
So understanding that Nudnik is extremely focused on sustainability and a circular economy, can you please tell us a little bit more about how you manage your business to achieve that standard?
Absolutely. I think the first thing that we do that is quite different is that we focus on the waste. The waste is the muse in a lot of ways, right? We build up a reserve of these offcut fabrics with our factory partners overseas. So we've got a quite robust reserve right now of inventory of these offcut fabrics, and we continue to build as we go along. But we look to those fabrics that we have in our reserve to design from. So we've now decided that we're going to be doing three categories. One is solids, one is prints, and one is color block, like our signature color block look. And this was just a way for us to kind of categorize what we were seeing in volume in our reserve of offcuts and be able to kind of streamline that into some consistency for our customers. So all of our garments are engineered to utilize these small scraps. But the way we play with color and the way we put color together is quite creative. So I think in terms of being able to create three different looks, we hit a lot of what consumers are looking for. Like we have consumers that, want basics, they want solids, they want neutral colors. We've also got consumers that come to us for the signature color block that kind of made us popular with our first disruptor tee to begin with. And they want that because they like the idea that it stands out. And then we just come up with some really cool prints in our reserve. So it made sense to do prints. And there are a lot of consumers that want that all over print look. And, there are some colors in our reserve that might be like, for example, like a burnt orange color that comes in. And that might not pair so well with some other colors, but it will look really cool as a solid. So it's just the way that we can utilize this scrap to the best of its ability. I'd have to say that's our number one MO for our business, is to really focus on that waste as the muse. Because what can happen in any business is that you look to trends occasionally for inspiration. You look here, you look there. And you can't do that when you're working from a waste material. I mean, you can be inspired by things, but you might not find that in what you're working with. So it's just a different creative process. And I think for my sister and I, it's one that really excites us because it allows us to really, truly be creative with that waste. So that's number one. Number two was just really following that journey. Coming from the waste management industry, I mean, we hadn't been in fashion, although my sister did go to school for fashion merchandising. And, we've had an appreciation for fashion, especially thrift, throughout our lives and things like that. But we'd never followed that complete journey through the customer experience, the e-commerce experience. So really, it was learning about that first. And then in the waste management world, we do really focus on auditing. So, when we got our first mailers, when we got our first this, that, and the other, when we went through that process, we started to see like, oh, well, maybe we can improve on this, or maybe we can improve on this, make this less wasteful. Maybe we can create an accessory to utilize these smaller scraps, things like that. And that'll be a continuous journey with our business in general. It's allowed us to like revise our packaging a few times over. Like we started with recycled mailers that were made from 100% post-consumer plastic. Now we're moved on completely to craft paper mailers made from 100% recycled paper. And that evolution also adapts to what is available out there in the marketplace in terms of packaging, and it's getting better. So we just kind of keep our on the pulse of it all and decide if that's a new product that we want to make that shift towards. I think circularity really is most about just auditing what you're doing and looking at ways that you can do better.
So you also use compostable garments bags. You've recently introduced that.
Yes.
Which is fantastic.
I mean, and that was just such an interesting thing too. Like we work with our overseas partners in India, and I always thought it was actually a customs requirement to have every garment packed in a plastic poly bag to come over. And so through our auditing process, of course, we didn't actually even know that. When we got our first shipment with our partners overseas, it came in just regular plastic bags. And we were like, oh my God, like this is totally against what we're trying to do, right? So we quickly revised and found a better option, which is 100% compostable poly bag. So that's where we stand now. Now, again, with the, just moving in kind of trying to figure it out, I believe that it isn't a customs requirement to have that poly bag. It's not an easy yes or no. And there's a lot of digging that has to go on. I mean, this literature of whether or not it's necessary or not is not common knowledge, and it's certainly not on the internet. But if it isn't necessary in terms of customs to have a clear bag that they can see through, we are thinking about even moving towards like a thin craft bag. The reason we try to go after craft paper is that we work closely with a composting facility here to test compostability of certain things. And craft paper, 100% recycled craft paper, actually adds a lot of value to the soil and the compost, which is the out product. So in our mind right now, it's how do we get more over to using the craft paper so that we're not just biodegrading something at the end, we're actually adding value to that end product.
Brilliant. Tell us about the no water usage, because usually in the fashion industry and the production of clothing, there's a lot of water that is being used and wasted.
Tons. It's 2,700 liters of water to make one t-shirt. And so we don't use any water because we're using the off-cut fabrics. We actually call it negative waste because it would have otherwise ended up as waste. And we're using that to make our new products. So we're not actually producing any new fabric ourselves, which is where the water comes from. So for us, there's a lot of great businesses out there that are recycling cotton and doing really cool things, but it does take a lot of resources. What we love about just the art of upcycling is that we really are just looking at that waste and really doing very minimal to it. We're literally cutting it into the pattern piece we want and then putting it into our garment. So there's no new water usage. There's no new dyeing process. There's no new any of those typical resources that would then go into making a new product. Kind of the goal, the beauty of it is that those off-cut fabrics, we're using organic cotton. Yes, we don't have control over the colorways, but the colors produced as off-cuts are generally colors that are being made into all the other garments you see. So those colors are pretty amazing.
Yeah.
They are, indeed.
And it's new fabric. It's never been worn, which was important to parents. So, you know, as an adult, I have no qualms with shopping or wearing secondhand. But when we did a study early on, when it came to parents, they were really after that organic cotton new product. You know, they feel better putting that on their baby as opposed to secondhand. I think that's shifting as well, but that's another reason why we use the off-cut fabrics.
That's great. Do you offset the carbon footprint that you use for your deliveries?
We do. We actually just started working with Shopify's offset program. So basically we work with Shopify's offset program. It's an app that we install in our Shopify store. It minimizes the carbon footprint. It also calculates the shipping emissions and then it monitors the impact. So we get a bill every month based on the amount of orders we've had and the amount that we've offset. It's a couple cents per order generally, and they're working with certifiable programs like planting trees and different things like that. So we've only been doing that for about a month. Month prior to that, we were using in our checkout, there was a little option to plant a tree if the consumer wanted, and the consumer paid. So it was a way for the consumer or a customer to offset the shipping of their own order. And then we felt like that was great. And, you know, a percentage of our customers did add that extra dollar to their bill to do that. As a company, we just weren't okay with knowing that there were orders that weren't being offset coming through. So this was our way to kind of take that over and be responsible. The only thing I will say is that I think Shopify's working on this. Don't have an easy way for the customers to have visibility of what that looks like. It's all done through the back end. So, you know, quarterly or yearly, we're going to be putting out a report that shows, you know, the emissions or the carbon offset that we've done as a company. But I think if, you know, if they're watching, it could be a really good way for them to use that interface to be able to showcase customers the good that we're doing. We're also doing, we work with Green Story, which is a Canadian company. And on our website, you'll see a ticker under our first series of images that we have. And you'll see it on the product page as well, and then in the cart page. And that's a tally also of all of the different emissions, CO2, water saved, waste saved from landfill. And that's the header at the beginning of our website is generated as a company as a whole. But what's really cool is if you go into specific products, you'll see that product. And then say you've added three items to your cart. When you get to the cart phase, you'll see the tally of your order for all of those pieces within your cart as well. So just trying to be super transparent and give people that real opportunity and to showcase the good work that they're doing in terms of purchasing a Nudnik product over, let's say, a fast fashion alternative.
I like the idea that you're making the visibility for everyone else to realize what you're doing in terms of saving. And I've just clicked onto that link exactly as you said it. So at the moment, you've saved 3,196 kilometers of driving emissions, 177,195 days of drinking water, 494,326 hours of LED bulb energy, and 836 pounds of waste diverted to landfill. Now, Unfortunately, I'm not very good at pounds, but I will figure that one out. But it's fantastic to see that transparency. It really is.
Yeah, and companies like Green Story and even Shopify's offset program make it easy for consumers just to be able to like get these metrics. And I do think that's important for brands, is to continue to become more transparent and for consumers to understand what these things mean. It's just the same as reading a food label. And when our tags that come on our garments, actually the back of them read like a food label. And that was meant to inspire people to look at the clothing tags the same way they do a food label, to see, you know, what they're made of, where they're made, and all of that good stuff, and to understand what those mean too.
I really like that transparency side. And I actually think that generally the public are asking for more of that from many, many people these days, which is great.
I agree. Yeah.
So is there, obviously, let's go through the cycle of the clothing. So somebody's bought some clothing from you, shipped over to you, that's offset and everything else like that. They've worn it for a certain amount of time. And then at that point, it's got a bit worn out. Is there sort of a garment return process where they get sort of a discount for another one or an upgrade, and the material could potentially be reused? Is there anything like that? I'm just thinking for the circular economy side of things.
So what we've got in place right now is we've got a secondary marketplace group off our Facebook page. And this is a place that was set up for customers to be able to either exchange, like different sizes of the Nudnik products they've bought in the past. With our shirts, like shirts, and you guys have kids. I mean, with my kids too, it's always the pants that go first, like the knees and the pants go first. Yeah. Shirts typically get passed down through my kids because they just don't get worn in the same way. So we're really focused on the idea of being able to have a secondary market with the shirts primarily. And we do make our shirts with extended wear. So our hoodie can give your child about 3 years of wear. If you've bought it where it's slightly big, you can roll up the sleeves and then you can unroll them, and that's going to fit them. So we've really taken our time to engineer products that look good when they're kind of worn baggy and comfortable, but also look equally as cool and good when they're worn like at the right size. Pants are a different thing. We're working on patches right now. And the patches it's a bit of a challenge in the sense that we only use 100% cotton because we want our clothing to be compostable. So that is an ultimate end process too. Now, the only difference is you can't just put your garment in a compost bin. You have to chop it up. And we are working with our compost partners to figure out how small those pieces need to be, the success rate, to make sure that we're giving our customers the right information too. Even with the packaging, like, you know, their equipment, unfortunately, isn't as savvy to say, oh, just from visuals, this is a compostable bag and this is just a plastic bag. So you ultimately there has to be some level of breaking that down first to ensure it's 100% compostable. But our garments typically, why we use 100% cotton is that they can be compostable. So when we're thinking circular, that was our end result. Now, I mean, it breaks our heart to think of, you know, someone just chopping up our clothing at the end of it when they're done. I mean, we do love the donation process for that. We encourage to pass it down and around. And I do think that we're going to get a lot of success with our shirts that way. For the pants, we're still trying to find the right patch solution that is 100% cotton or 100% recyclable material, or if it does use something that it's a natural like polymer or something like that. Just because if we're going to put that on the pants and then we're going to instruct people to compost it, that would compromise the ability to compost it. So that's a work in progress with the pants. You know, we also, like in my house, we cut the pant legs off if there's holes in them, and they become shorts for two seasons too. So there are ways that we use content just to kind of encourage people to do things like this with their knit garments. But the first thing that was really important to us was just to use the mono material of cotton. So the one material source and a natural material source to make sure that it can just go back into the compost stream.
So with the initial materials, how did you go about, certainly at the start, I guess, with the idea, how did you go about sourcing?
So at the beginning, we started with post-consumer waste. When, you know, back in 2016, when everyone just started talking about fashion waste and what it was, a lot of the emphasis was put on post-consumer, and still is. I mean, it's a huge portion of textile waste is post-consumer waste. So what we were doing at the beginning was Toronto's actually a global hub for the importing and exporting of secondhand clothing. And we didn't know that at the time, but we learned that fairly quickly. And there's what we call fripperies here. They're these huge warehouses, like stacked from bottom to top, full of your secondhand clothing. And what these people do is they grade it. So they sort through it and they grade it. There's like 150 or so different grades of clothing. And then they bale it, depending on who's buying it and what grade. Now, a lot of it goes overseas to places like Africa. We were able to kind of intercept and get 100-pound bales of what we wanted at the beginning, which was adult-sized t-shirts and sweatshirts, solid colors of large sizes. So our thought process is that we're just going to like salvage this as fabric. Like these are sweatshirts that sometimes had never been worn, but they might have been in a regular size or what have you. And then we would just cut off the arms. We had a deconstruction process at the beginning. We'd cut off the arms. We'd lay those flat. We'd try to pair them up with like-minded sizes. And then we digitally cut our pattern pieces out. This was great. It gave us our first product line. The challenges were scale. Like it was very difficult to find, to scale and find 100-pound bales of exclusively that. There didn't seem to be a lot of the sweatshirts and t-shirts of solids. Also, minimum wage went up here in Ontario at that time. And these fripperies actually, it made more economic sense for them just to send more over to places like Africa as opposed to using staff to pick locally for clients. So there was challenges in terms of scale. And one of the main challenges was that we didn't have control over the material content. Like when we got a 100-pound bale of sweatshirts and t-shirts, most of it was synthetic. A lot of it was, sweatshirts that probably wouldn't have stood the test of time too. So, I mean, we felt better that we were upcycling it and putting something new out there and giving it a second life. But in terms of longevity, I mean, it wasn't our ideal type of fabric to work with. Like we couldn't guarantee the organic cotton for our consumers. We couldn't guarantee that it wasn't used and all of these things that customers still had issues about at the time in 2016. I think it's come a long way since then. But we did go through some accelerator programs here in Canada, and the name of the game became scale. And we just kind of started to think, what is the type of fabric or textile waste in a large enough volume, in a consistent volume, where we can understand what the content is, where it can be have some sort of consistency. And that did take us to cutting waste. And then ultimately, it was finding the right partner. So LinkedIn's a magical place for that. I probably get about 50 suppliers all over the world contact me every day, not even necessarily understanding what we do in terms of, using offcuts, but just like, hey, let's work together or send us your patterns. We'll, do up some samples. And so it just started to narrow down the process we want. I mean, the most important things were finding someone that understood what we wanted to do. That was generating the offcuts and the material types we wanted, but also was ethical. I mean, it was very important for us to find the right partners in that regard, which we did, and they're fantastic.
So with these the partners, I guess, in two sides of it, first, when you first approached them, but also now, what was their initial feedback when you described what it is you wanted to do? Because obviously it's very different from what they'd have been used to.
Well, the great thing about this factory, they're called Kishore Exports. They're in India, right near the Taj Mahal. They have a lot of different certifications. They have GOTS certified, Okio Tex, Fair Trade, SA 8000. So, they're ethical. They use non-toxic dyes, organic cotton, all of these good things. But then they had a certification that we hadn't seen out there before, which was UpMade. And what UpMade is it's a certification for customer factories who upcycle fabrics or who are fluent in upcycling fabrics. So they had already worked with, so if they have a customer, for example, that is making shirts, sometimes if they did have offcuts, they would make those into bags for them. They had a catalog of some of these kind of cool accessory products that they developed that they could make from offcuts. So it was a great alternative for their own clients to say, okay, if you want to use your offcuts for something positive, here's a list of the different things we can do with them. The only difference for us is we came in there with our own idea of what we wanted to create, and they helped us further develop that. We started off with one t-shirt made this way called our Disruptor Tee. It was successful, so we used that as the catalyst to build our full collection afterwards. So now we have 7 different styles, 1 accessory. So we took our t-shirt to them and they really helped us craft the additional pieces for our full collection. And they're fantastic. Having conversations with people that truly understand the motive behind what we do, and also knowing it's a pain point for them too. Like it's a real effort of collaboration.
Yeah.
How did the market initially react to your clothes? Did you have any pushback?
It's funny, when we started in 2016 with that first collection made from the post-consumer waste, we actually thought there'd be more pushback with, you know, the fact that we were using old clothes. Like it was like the concept, like, are people going to think that these are old clothes, that these are dirty clothes, that these are, because it was post-consumer. Now we've come a long way in the last 5-6 years on how we perceive textile waste or thrift. I mean, it's grown exponentially and it's popular. It's become almost second nature for most consumers to be able to just think about thrift as mainstream, right? But back then, especially when it came to kids' clothes, we did think that that was going to be our biggest challenge. We did get a few customers, or we did get a few people that were questioning that. And I think a lot of our early days were spent, especially with our branding and marketing, educating the consumer. Like, what is textile waste? What are we doing? You know, like, what is the circular economy? Like, what is sustainable fashion? I mean, we've come so far when I think back to what we thought we had to even tell people about what we were doing versus now, you know, it's a different conversation. Most people understand the fashion industry is wasteful. Most people understand that there's a problem that's leading to climate change. So we have to reverse our consumerism, or we have to look for sustainable products and things like that. But yeah, I think, you know, it wasn't as much as we anticipated, to be honest with you. I think we found a very good niche demographic, even in our own city, pretty quickly. You know, the press has been amazing to us here in Canada. So we had our first products on the market, and within a month we were in some really great gift guides for the holidays and speaking at conferences and things like that. So I think the instant credibility really fared well for us, and it continued on. And I think what we found as this really great community that we've built is that it's a community of like-minded people that are really looking for like cool, sustainable products they know are made ethically and made from waste, which gives it, you know, this edge for people that are truly looking to live a more greener and zero waste lifestyle. And that's just kind of snowballed too. I mean, it's snowballed into the US, and we're getting orders, like, because we're e-commerce, we're getting orders from different places in the world as well. And that's just showing us that these are some areas that we'd like to target this year and next, and figure out how to get our products into some of these other places.
Brilliant. Tell us a little bit more about your future-proof mark. We spoke about the patches. Is there more to it?
Future-proof for us is just that continuation of a mindset. Future-proof for us is that we want to put out products that are going to protect our future and not take away from it. You know, we are still in the business of making clothing, so we are still putting product out there. I don't think consumerism is going anywhere, but I do think that hopefully consumerism has started to change and that we're using our purchasing power for good. Nudnik really wants to be a brand that, whether it's just clothing or other products in the future, that we're putting out products that people can rely on, that really are working with good people, with waste, so giving waste a second life, and are made with either a composting plan, recycling plan, deconstruction plan, to make sure that they're always going to end up in a place that they don't end up in landfill, into recycling, into something new. So yeah, that future-proof mark is basically just like, we were trying to think of the wording of what is our collection, what is our product range, and future-proof just kept coming up. So we thought, let's just call it future-proof kids wear. And it's a never expanding thing. And I mean, I think it'll take future-proof kids wear, future-proof products. We were torn between the two because we also have ideas of doing some other cool stuff in the future. But for now, future-proof kids wear is where we're at. So
that's brilliant. You obviously have a really good grasp on fashion industry, and I'm assuming you understand more than we do and our audience does about its effects on our planet. Can you explain and expand a bit more on this?
Yeah, the fashion industry is a big beast. And I knew waste. I certainly knew waste coming into it, but I've learned a lot about the fashion industry too. And I like to say fast fashion, because the fashion industry as a whole, there's a lot of great players out there, and I mean they're popping up every day too, of people and brands that are really doing good work, you know, really, really doing good work. But the fast fashion industry as a whole has a lot of work to do. I think it's a business model that is not sustainable. And I think it's getting easier for consumers as we go with new brands and products popping up to really have alternatives to that. Whereas even a few years ago, there wasn't as many, especially in the kids wear sector. So for us, it was important to, it was important to start in the kids wear sector because we knew that the smaller garments and the smaller pieces made the most sense. We are thinking of different expansions too as we go. But kids wear is definitely the primary focus. And it is the primary focus too, because there aren't a lot of scaled or large brands in the kids wear space that are doing circular clothing. The fashion industry as a whole, I mean, fashion, you know, is the second dirtiest industry next to big oil. I mean, there's a couple tons of waste sent to landfill, textile waste sent to landfill every second. I mean, we know the water consumption. When we say 27 liters of water for one t-shirt, that's the amount of water an average person would drink over a three-year period for one t-shirt. So, I mean, the stats, as you keep going, they're staggering, right? I mean, I think it's relaying that to the consumer and, again, having that transparency and understanding of how wasteful this is and how we can do better. So I'm excited because it's an industry that definitely needs a lot of work, but I also see that shift happening. So it's an exciting time to be a part of it too.
So are there other companies within the mainstream that are either looking at your approach or looking at other approaches to be better at what they do in terms of their impact?
Absolutely. I'd say that the one really great thing that's come out in the last few years, and some of it's been piloted even in the last 5 to 10 years, is things like RenewCycle, like different fibers made from old fibers. Now, it's a very complicated process because textiles, and a reason why a lot of them enter landfill, or most of them enter landfill, is because it's a lot like plastics. Most of the clothing we wear today is a mixture of those natural and synthetic fibers, and the combination of having those two together make it very difficult to recycle. So it's just like if you have your plastic water bottle with your plastic top, those are actually two different types of plastic that need to be separated from each other in order to be recycled successfully. So textiles, it was always like, okay, well, we can deal with natural fibers this way and recycle them. And we can, you know, melt down synthetic fibers and then spin them back into new yarn over here. But the combination of the two was the breaking point. And so most clothes are made that way. Most clothes ended up in landfill. There are a couple businesses out there that have seemed to have cracked the code of being able to do the recycling of those two fibers together. But I think the onus should also be on brands to use monomaterials, which is what Nudnik does. So a monomaterial is when you use one material type in your entire garment. Adidas did it with their future-proof shoe recently, or their future-proof shoe within the last year or two. And they made even like the shoelace holes, the shoelaces, the soles, the outer shoe, all from the same type of plastic, which essentially means it can be fully recycled and put back into their process. So I think that's first step. I hate the idea of having to react to products that are made. I think like the proactive approach is always better, but I think it's very difficult to be proactive through an entire, you know, $3 trillion fashion industry. So like I'd love for brands just to use one material, and that way we know how to recycle it. But yeah, I mean, I think there is a lot of progression. I see a lot of brands using these different fibers that have been made from old. The other thing is using fibers that come from different things like trees or food waste. There's some really great things out on the marketplace right now. I think Allbirds just came out with a shoe that's made from like sugar cane or something like that. So there's a lot of great stories out there with brands that are starting to test some of these. Even H&M, as a large fast fashion brand, has recently come out, and they're going to be pioneering and really testing a lot of these great new fibers in small collections within there. So it is a positive step to showcase that. And I think that longevity and creating products of quality has also become a core focus, really being focused on putting a product out there that will stand the test of time, that also has resale potential. I mean, we see that with Levi's jeans, for example, a brand of jeans that whether you go to a thrift store or not, they always have resale potential. And I think they're starting to capitalize on that natural segue with their brand.
I recently read that Patagonia are actually doing a secondhand or a resale section through themselves as well, which I thought was fantastic.
Absolutely. I think it's Nordstrom's or one of the big department stores in the US now has a section in their retail stores too, or department stores for secondhand as well. So I think just the idea of being able to complete that infrastructure, like when your clothes are gone, if you can recapture them and sell them again, I mean, for me, that's a win-win. Why also, I mean, thrift stores, I would never want them to lose their inventory too. But it makes sense for a brand to also capitalize on that secondhand market as well with their own products. So I think there's a lot of innovation that's come out of that space recently.
Would you say it's been a consumer-led change or a business-led change or an amalgamation of the two?
I think amalgamation of the two, but I do think it's very consumer-led as well. Now, it's interesting because I do think consumers are leading the charge for sure. And I do think a lot of brands, I also think it's like the Jones theory, like your neighbor is doing this, like get on board too. So I do think it comes a bit from that, like seeing brands that are making these positive steps are also enticing other brands to do the same. And I think if you're not going to do anything, you're going to fall far behind. I mean, Forever 21 is a great example within the last few years of going bankrupt. I mean, they didn't instill any sustainability practices. And I think it really took them down, to be honest. So I think that a lot of businesses just feel like this is the way we're going. I also think 2020 was a big catalyst for that. Like, we know climate change is serious. 2020 is a new decade. Like, what are we going to do different this decade? And there was a lot of great initiatives that came out in the fashion space for brands to kind of come on board with and keep them accountable along the way too. So I do think it's a mixture of both.
So sort of looking a little bit away from the sustainability in terms of the actual material, but it more sustainability in terms of people's livelihoods and lives and how they're treated. Could you give us your views on how some fast fashion companies are treating their labor force?
I think there's been some great examples of how not to treat your workforce in the last number of years. I mean, we've all read reports, of these horrible working conditions, driving down that price point. I mean, essentially just having that fast fashion business model, which is all about cheap clothes, cheap labor, and then, in those clothes end up in landfill, after three or four wears. I mean, that is the business model, unfortunately, of fast fashion. And I do think that there is a huge push to do better. And there is, I mean, a lot of the large brands and fast fashion brands have signed on to better working conditions, and they are being more transparent. But I think what makes it very difficult is when you're such a large company, oftentimes you are giving your contract to one factory, and then through the back end door, they're actually putting it out to three or four smaller factories. And then that's where the transparency gets lost. So it's not always that these large fast fashion brands, for example, wanted to do the work in this manner with the workforce. But that's, I mean, in order to compete with that price, this is just what people felt like they had to do. But I think there is now more transparency metrics. I think blockchain was a big, great introduction to that, because I think a lot of these supply chains are being traced or tracked, more transparently. But I think there's still a lot of work to do. And it's fashion, it's across industry as well, in terms of unethical labor. As a company that uses an overseas workforce, we're such proponents of like the partnership of good factory partners overseas that are paid good wages, taken care of. We're doing good work together because we're focused on quality. And when they give us a price, we don't balk at it because we realize that is a fair price and that is what this costs. And I think consumers also have a responsibility in that too. If you're going to continue to buy, the $1 t-shirt, you're going to continue to drive that unsecure labor force too. So it's definitely comes back to the consumer who also has a responsibility.
Yeah. What are the biggest challenges you see in the industry at the moment, then, especially trying to achieve circular fashion sort of status?
I think our biggest challenge right now is just brand awareness, like how we get ourselves out there. I think the pandemic has been fantastic for brands like us who are more niche to be able to come up with new consumers, because all of a sudden a lot more people are online and at home, and it's just been another way that we can connect with them, as opposed to when everyone's just walking down the street or going to their typical department store or what have you and just buying the fashion that they normally would buy. So it's interesting. We've moved, I mean, the other thing too is when we talk about expansion, like we're an e-commerce company first, we don't have brick and mortar stores. So a customer can buy from us, let's say in Australia, but they're paying the shipping cost. For us, that's a big pain point because we want to be accessible to other people who want to buy our products. And we do think of ourselves as a catalyst to getting into living more sustainably and zero waste. So for us, it's like, how do we now expand and also give people the opportunity to buy our products without having to ship it across the world or pay that premium. A thing that's popped up kind of could be a resolution to that in a lot of ways is that also through the pandemic, there's been a lot of big digital marketplaces that have come to fruition. One of them is Circular, and it's actually to an Australian as well that created Circular. And it's a sustainable marketplace where the brands are vetted. And you're on there, and you can also combine products, which is really key too, because we're kids wear, we're a niche in that sense. But let's say you wanted to buy something for your kid and then also for yourself. Like, here's a marketplace where you can buy all, you know, alternatives or different products and pay like one shipping fee. So I think that that's also going to be something really interesting is the idea of these digital marketplaces that take a lot of these sustainable products and put them under one larger umbrella. So it's easier for consumers to go somewhere like that as opposed to finding, you know, 10 of their favorite brands and going to them individually. So yeah, I mean, I think it's been a really, really interesting time in terms of, you know, how consumers shop and where they shop throughout the pandemic. But I think we're well positioned to be that sustainable solution for kids and cute and fun and stylish kids wear. So we have a lot of dedicated followers that just want to buy directly from us, but it'll be interesting to see as we go.
So at the moment, you're working with kids' clothing only, and you said that there are some future plans. Are you going to expand into an adult range as well? I have to say, we looked at your hoodies and we both said we could wear a few of them.
Absolutely.
I know, us too. Yeah, there is. We are working on our first adult products, and they are going to be, the way that we're going to position them first is going to be for the parents that have wanted to buy from us. Because I almost every other order we get is, you know, when are we going to be able to buy something for ourselves as well? So what you'll first see is you'll see a t-shirt, probably sweatshirt version of our kids wear, maybe adapted slightly, but obviously adapted in size, that gives our customers the ability to do the mini me thing. Like, they want to dress like their kid, or they both want a trailblazer hoodie. And then we're thinking of expansion outward from there for adults too. But the other really cool thing that we're doing is collaborations. So, this has always been a part of the business that has really excited Alexander, my twin, and I, is that there are a lot of brands, there are a lot of other people that have large volumes of textile waste, whether it's like overstock merchandise or, you know, end of rule or what have you. And there is a collaboration effort that we could work together to create some really cool either limit pieces or small capsule collections or a solution like ongoing, like every year we put out something with the textile waste. So the first one we have that we can talk about is launching in June. And there's a big band in Canada called The Tragically Hip. And the lead singer, Gord Downie, died a few years ago, unfortunately. But the band's still alive and well, and they're just such amazing advocates for human rights and the environment and all sorts of things. So they're putting out a new line of hip kids clothes, and it's a Nudnik hip collaboration. So it'll be our t-shirts and sweatshirts with really cool kind of prints and song lyrics and things like that on them. So that's dropping in June. And we have a few other ones in the pipe that I'm not at liberty to say yet, but stay tuned. They're very exciting as well. But it's a cool joint collaborative effort where we can work together to put cool stuff out there that means something.
So besides the kids' clothing and hopefully some adults, we're looking forward to that. Too jealous that our kids are going to have them.
You'll be the first to know, yeah.
Now, what are the next steps for Nudnik? Are you getting involved in other sectors as well, or you're just keeping on the fashion side at the moment?
We, because my sister and I are such idea people, we do have like a couple Google Docs where we just are, we have a lot of inspiration to do a lot of different stuff. But right now the focus is on expanding the kids' wear. So we're looking at doing denim, working with a great denim factory in Bangladesh. They're pioneers in sustainable denim, and they use 100% cotton denim, so no synthetics, which is our MO. So we're looking at developing some denim products, and expanding and scaling the breadth of our kids' wear. So that really is the goal for 2021, as well as doing one or two of these first collaborations and the adult products. But future Nudnik, we've always envisioned this idea that Nudnik could be a house for a lot of different products for the millennial family made from waste that never end up as waste. You know, so our ideas are endless in terms of fold or rollout and what we do first. It really has to do with aligning ourselves with the right partners where we get that waste from and then turn it into something new. So, you know, we're putting some tentacles out there, and these will be things that we see over the next few years with Nudnik. But we're thinking of stuffed animal, blocks, you know, different things that we can make from various forms of these manufacturing wastes, yeah. Offcut waste. You know, furniture, we have a whole cachet, like quilts, pillows. We're also developing a cute little jacket for kids that could lead itself to an adult product as well, like a quilted jacket. So a thicker, more durable idea will be like a heritage jacket, like a really cool silhouette that can be passed down and around. But yeah, the big picture idea is to be a one-stop shop for multiple different products with that same style and color, use of color.
Oh, that's fantastic. We'll have to keep you getting you on every now and again when there's something new there's something that we can new. Always have
yeah,
a look at
absolutely.
As well. It's going to be good.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's exciting when we think about waste, again, coming full circle back to the beginning as our muse, the possibilities are really endless. So it is just the focus on, you know, scaling the fashion, scaling the kids' wear further still, you know, getting our tentacles out there globally and then introducing some of these new products. And yeah, when we think about the waste and the offcuts and how that spans industries, we get really excited about the possibilities. So.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a fantastic idea and a sort of a great stepping stone to so many other things as well.
Thank you. Yeah, it is.
What other aspects of a circular economy do you include in your everyday life?
Oh, gosh. Well, I told you my husband's an environmental filmmaker as well. And when we first met, it was because he did a film on garbage. So, I mean, this is a dinner table conversation for us in a lot of regards, you know, with my father and my brother works for my father, too. So we really are a family that is centered around waste and circularity and recycling. I mean, everything. Like, we have a container of coffee grounds by our coffee maker that we put the coffee grounds into every day, and we do compost them. We do other, I'm thinking of like, how do I make body scrubs or how do I make soaps? And I have dappled with that, you know, in the past. You know, like food waste sense, it's like keep all your onion peels and your little bits of carrots, the ends of things, and you can make veggie stock. No, I buy these candles, Patty Wax candles. I'm not even sure. I don't think they're Canadian. I think they're a US-based company. They're called Patty Wax. And they come in these really cute ceramic containers. And that's the reason I buy them. First, they're natural soy candles, so there's no synthetics. But when I'm finished with them, I use those little containers for like to put a plant in or like your key bowl or things like that. So I think circularity in my mind is like, what I buy, what I use, it's just having that forward circular thinking to say, you know, what can I do with this afterwards? And almost having that foresight ahead of time so that you're not just purchasing things that are ultimately going to end up in the garbage. So, I mean, my kids too, I mean, food waste is another thing. I mean, they, you know, sometimes if we go to a restaurant, for example, I'll order a kid's meal. And if it's a large portion, it's like I'll have a salad and probably half that meal. Just because I don't want to send all that, you know, because they'll have like one chicken finger and like three fries, for example, or something like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just understanding waste generation, I suppose, and where you can limit, the, you know, that along the path. So I'd have to say those are some little examples, but I think it's, you know, I could probably go on, right?
That's good.
Is there anything else that you'd like to share with your listeners? Any other projects that you're working on?
I think the biggest thing is if you follow us along on social or you pop into our site every once in a while, we're adding new colorways across those 7 core styles that we have every month. So, and they're limited. I mean, that's the beauty of our business as well, is when you think about whether you've got a Nudnik piece or not, or you've bought from us, that's only one of a certain amount of product. That changes every time we do it based on the amount of that scrap. But that's a very limited product. And once it's gone, it's gone. That colorway will not be repeated. That print will not be repeated. So it's a fun place to check in and out of. And if you see something you like, jump on it. And then, you know, and I mean, we just get such a kick out of like putting new products out there. And as we launched our full collection after many COVID delays in December, and we had our t-shirt before that for a good year and a half. Now that we've had a bunch of months worth of product and we have a lot of different colorways, the breadth of that, when you look at it all together, is quite astonishing. And it really is just such a beautiful example of how we can use waste to create new things. And the waste really just does show. So yeah, I just encourage people to keep checking in. And, you know, we're going to start, my sister and I are also starting to get back on social after our big lockdown here, and you know, start getting together more and talking about what we do and why we do it. So yeah. So come check us out.
So where should people go and find you?
So nudniklife.com is our website. At Little Nudniks is our Instagram. I think at Nudnik Life is our TikTok, which we've just started in the last little while. I can't speak much to it. My sister handles the social, so come check us out there, see what's going on. Yeah, I think those are the key places to come.
Brilliant.
We'll put the links to them on the show notes as well, so everyone can grab them and have a good look through.
Awesome.
So there's a couple of questions before we wrap up that we ask every guest, because it's good to get a good spread of where entrepreneurs are coming from and so forth. So understanding the climate emergency that we're in, what keeps you up at night?
I'd have to say the one thing that keeps me up at night is the safety or the future for my kids. You know, when I think back to my childhood and this abundance of resources and, you know, all of like fresh drinking water or, you know, safety in terms of like our climate and what's happening around us, I do feel insecure about what that future does look like for them, not just for them, but for their own kids. So I do think that that does keep me up at night. And it also is the proponent behind why I do what I do, at least, you know, feeling like I can have some control over what I'm doing and making sure that it's impactful, gives me some, you know, some relief, I suppose. But yeah, I'd have to say that that number one thing is definitely what that future looks like for my kids.
Yeah. We can
right?
completely sympathize with that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a tough one.
So, to turn a more positive spin, what are the aspects that you're most optimistic about for the future?
I like, and I guess I should have mentioned it too, where you can find me and how we met too, is over LinkedIn. Like I love LinkedIn. I'm surrounded by wonderful people on LinkedIn, like yourselves, other people that are really doing good, focused on doing good, focused on not just status quo, but really pushing those boundaries to do things better. So I think in terms of optimism, you know, it's that kind of age old rule, like surround yourself by people that are smarter than you, but also people that are doing, you know, really inspiring things. And I think that that's the goal for certainly for me on places like LinkedIn, is just to really start to tune into the good going on around the planet in the areas of interest to me. So like the circular economy, waste, product design, things like that. And I think that, you know, if I can go there and get my daily dose of like all of these good articles or positive things happening, that's enough to help me even continue to be inspired to do what I do and not just get like taken aback by all the negative in the world around climate change. Like it's easy just to feel like we can't do anything or that nothing's going to work or, you know, we're so far from a solution or what have you. If you put yourself in a group of people that are working on these solutions, you see very quickly that there is optimism, there is traction, like there is moving steps forward to positivity. So I do think that that would be my, you know, especially in COVID life where I'm not in front of people as much, like that would be the place that I spend a lot of time just kind of soaking it in, learning, and also like contributing to that conversation.
Our podcast is definitely our daily dose. Whenever we interview amazing people like you, it makes it feel more achievable. I think before we started this, we were quite down and did not look towards the future with excitement. And meeting amazing people, interviewing amazing people just like yourself, has just completely changed our point of view, I think.
Yeah, likewise. I mean, for me doing this too, it's you know, it's nice, and especially for consumers, because this is exactly what you said, a daily dose of something good. So it's nice to know that these resources and things are out there.
Exactly. If there is one thing that we can change to have a massive impact on the health of our planet, what would that be? How can we be good?
Because I'm in fashion, I suppose, I would say just wear or use your products longer. I won't put the stats out there because I don't know the exact stat off the top of my head, but something about if we were just to wear our clothes even 6 months longer, the more positive impact that would have on the planet. If we were just to use this other one product we use that much longer, you know, we are just such a product of fast consumerism, just using things, throwing them away, using things, throwing them away, single use, one-time use. If we just think about the things we buy or the things we wear and just, yeah, hold on to it for a bit longer, take care of it, repair it, give it a second life. I think if we can focus on that as a first step, even that can start to turn around some positive results as well.
Absolutely. Indeed. So with this episode, we're really excited to be able to do a special giveaway.
Yes.
It's a Nudnik giveaway. Could you tell us a little bit more about this?
Absolutely. So we're going to be giving away one of our play suits. So a play suit is a combination of either our Disruptor tee or our Originator tee. We're going to do our Originator tee, which is our long sleeve version of our t-shirt, with the play pant, which is a lightweight play pant, and the combination of the two is what we call a play suit. So it's going to be in our new color block style shadow puppet that launched last week. It's running out soon. So it's, again, it's going to be a great play suit that once that colorway is gone, it's gone. So it's, and a matching, hero band, sorry, our multi-purpose accessory. You could use it as a headband, a hat, a scarf, we call it a pandemic protector, like just pull it up over your nose. and it's all matching. So it's super, super cute.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's amazing. So
what would be great is if we get some pictures of those and we can put them up and let everybody know.
Yes.
That'll be absolutely fantastic. It's been an absolute pleasure and a fantastic learning curve for us as well. Certainly more for me, being less fashion aware perhaps, but it's been great to meet you and thank you very, very much for all the time.
Likewise. Thanks, guys. This was a real pleasure for sure.
Thank you.
Take care.
You too.
What a fantastic guest. It was amazing, all the information she shared with us, an absolute wealth of knowledge on the fashion industry and using a circular economy system to generate sustainable and no waste and no pollution product.
And we have another item for our How to Be Good list. Repair, reuse, upcycle, and extend the length of use of your clothing. We wanted to give you some facts, but there are so many facts about the fashion industry and its effects on our planet. We will be here for quite a few minutes talking about it. Instead, we are going to put it on our show notes and also generate quite a few social media posts with all these facts for you to read.
That's right. So please subscribe and review the podcast so we can keep doing what we're doing. And we're really looking forward to our next one. Take care. Bye-bye.